You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Yvette Matern. Yvette, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thanks for having me, Brainerd.
So Yvette, let's talk about what's happening in your studio now. I want to talk about the Global Rainbow Project and a number of things you've done, but what is it that you're working on or involved with at the moment?
Oh, yeah, cool. Well, I don't really, you know, I'm not really kind of a studio practicing visual artist, but I do force myself into a room that is, looks like a, well, I have a kind of a, actually a really beautiful studio in Berlin, but I usually, you know, I kind of like, my background is in film, and I kind of approach visual art like as like a filmmaker in a way, you know, and I'm always kind of thinking in my head before I do anything, which can take a long time or it can be kind of instantaneous. But what I'm trying to do now, and like the challenge really for me right now, is to kind of follow up the Global Rainbow, because the Global Rainbow is like this like massive, monumental, you know, kind of amazing thing. And it's really hard to do something after it because it's like, you know, in terms of scale and I don't know, it's been a bit of a challenge, and like people have been asking me, you know, like I've been asked to do a solo show, and I've been asked to, you know, send in some ideas for some other kind of quote-unquote monumental artworks, and it's, and I'm just kind of sitting, I've been pretty much, trying to challenge myself to figure out what exactly to do next, so I've got some ideas. I don't know if that answers it, but...
Well, it does. It sounds like the idea, I mean, to so the audience knows, and they'll see links on the site for your work, but the Global Rainbow, and you know, add to my description, is this, as you're saying, kind of monumental outdoor light project that's been produced in several cities, New York, New Haven, and all over the world, and it's a and so it's of colossal scale. I don't know how big it actually is, but it's enormous. And that's the project you're talking about when you mean following on that, which is kind of heroic scale. It's bigger than heroic scale. I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, it's just crazy because it's like you can see it for like up to about 60 kilometers, you know, depending on where you're standing. It's just like this really special little gem, you know. It's kind of mystical. It's kind of everything. But it is massive, and I still get requests for it, you know, kind of monthly, you know. I don't really have to kind of promote it or sell it. People come to me, and they really want it, and it's always something that it's a bit pricey because the lasers are really kind of custom-made and special lasers, so not everybody can do it, but... One thing that I'm trying to do now is to actually own my own lasers, because before I've been kind of farming out with this laser entertainment company, and that's what I'm working on now, is to have my own kit, you know, so I can kind of be independent and put it up whenever and wherever I want, you know, and that it's not, you know, dependent on some sort of fee to cover, you know, the technical stuff. So. But, yeah.
So, I mean, almost like, as you say, you approached it like film, and, I mean, correct me if this is, like, maybe a misinterpretation, but part of, on your website, you know, you refer to yourself, or perhaps others do, as the Rainbow Girl. Is that something that, it seems like something that you could continue to do for the rest of your life? Here's a, you know, and nothing wrong with that, but here's a monumental project that could happen in, you know, hundreds of venues all over the world in all different ways. Potentially you could only do that. And that's kind of what the Rainbow Girl seems to hint at, that it's this, what is that coming from, the Rainbow Girl? Because in a sense, what I'm saying is it seems to almost kind of typecast you, and there's nothing wrong with that. But is that part of the sort of rub there, or?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of like, I mean, it's a bit humorous because it, for myself at least, because I've been doing the project for so long now, and it was, you know, like this kind of Joan of Arc vision, like seeing a real rainbow and then deciding I wanted to create a rainbow the scale of a real rainbow. And it took me so long to do it, and a lot of people thought I was really pretty insane, you know, to try and even go that way. And so I think it was something that I've just called myself. And yeah, and I mean, I will do it. I will continue to do it until the end. I mean, I will continue to do it as long as people want to see it, because it's just something, I mean, I kind of, for me, it's, you know, I guess like we were, I mean, there are certain things in life, you know, that are really special, and I think the rainbow is one of them, and it kind of makes people happy, you know. It kind of, people are in awe when they see it. There are a lot of different reactions to it, but it's really like nothing anyone has seen, and when you see the photos, they're really spectacular, they're really beautiful, but until you see it in person, it's a whole other experience, you know. And I think people really freak out when they actually are like next to the lasers or under the lasers, and especially in New York, like when we did it from the Standard, I mean, it was just like people were freaking out, and so was I. Like every time I put it on, it's the same. So yes, I would continue to do it my entire life, but I would also like to do other things. And yes, it's very much coming from a, you know, I mean, I kind of see it as like widescreen, like, you know, 70 millimeter kind of, you know, like Antonioni, Zabriskie point kind of perspective. That's kind of what, you know, like, I mean, I definitely it's referencing some sort of film, CinemaScope kind of experience, but live, you know.
That's what it feels like. Let's move back a little bit to talk about this. I mean, also, I wanted to ask, are you teaching now or doing other work at this moment?
Yeah, no, I'm not teaching at all. You know, I loved teaching. Like, I love the students and I love the whole process of teaching, but I definitely was not into the whole bureaucracy and the whole process of like tenure. And it's like I didn't fit into that. I'm not like really a political person, like in that sense. Like I'm not kind of plotting in my career. I'm very much like an intuitive, like something will inspire me and I'll do it. And now I'm really kind of working on, you know, there are a couple of things that I have this, there's a gallery in Dallas that wants me to do something. It's called Sulong Gallery. It's really fantastic, and it's actually run by a wonderful woman. She's African American, and I think it's really great because it's like, you know, there's really not many galleries that are run by African Americans, and especially African American women. So we were like, I just met her in Dallas and we were talking about all this stuff, and then suddenly, like a couple weeks later, this crazy thing happened in Texas with this woman who died in the jail. And, you know, so I mean, I'm really like interested in, like, you know, issues of identity, definitely diversity, very much very aware of what's happening like racially and politically in the U.S. and globally. And that's kind of what inspires my work. And also, I really like color, you know, just in general, just like, so I'm thinking about doing some, I'm kind of like shifting, because it's like lasers are really, you know, number one, they're straight, like you can't bend them. It's really, and they're, you can't, you know, you have to be very geometrical when you are thinking about working with lasers. There are a lot of limitations. And so I've been kind of like shifting I'm thinking about doing another, I'm working on another piece that I might do in France with like smoke. Like, you know, I don't know if you remember do you like Apocalypse Now, this film Apocalypse Now?
Sure, amazing film.
So you know these whole sequences, I mean, it's like such a masterful film. So like Coppola, you know, like brings in this colored smoke. It's like, I think they're called like M18 smoke bombs that they use in the Vietnam War. So it like just like enhanced, and it just like brought the whole visual experience to this kind of operatic level with these like gorgeous, you know, like colored smoke going down the Mekong. So I'm thinking about working like that. I've always like, I would always kind of like noted it every time I see Apocalypse Now. I'm like, you know what? I want to do something like that, you know. So that's kind of where I'm moving into. It's not necessarily continuing to work with lasers, but maybe continuing to work in the public realm and working with something maybe, you know, maybe also in the scale of monumental, but not, you know, so that's where I'm going. That's in the direction that I'm heading.
And obviously in not teaching, which, I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from on that. So you're able to support yourself and continue to be a full-time artist in what you're doing.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, the thing is, like, it took a little while to get it going. You know, like, I was totally broke, like, scary broke, because I basically took a lot of, like, kind of my retirement fund to invest in the first Global Rainbow, which was in New York. And then it was, like, 2 years of, like, scary poverty, like, like, no joke, you know. But I had amazing photographs and documentation of the first rainbow, which was on Martin Luther King Day 2009, like, you know, excitement over Obama. It was, like, around exactly that time, like, the day before his inauguration, you know. And it was over Ground Zero. I mean, it had so much significance. And also, you know, beaming from Wall Street, it kind of just, like, resonated on so many things that are happening or have been happening in the last 10 years. And, you know, and then, like, it started kind of, like, taking off. And but it took a while to start making money off of it. And but, yeah, I basically now, you know, pretty much live off of that and, you know, selling other pieces of work. So,
well, I mean, it's also become, I mean, that's great. It's also partly because this, you know, the very large project, the Global Rainbows, have a kind of hybrid application. They have a commercial application as well because they're so huge, right? Is that part of what's happening, which is an interesting kind of in-between area? You're doing something that's kind of beyond art in a gallery. It's...
Yeah, you know, I've always, like, kind of, and maybe it's because I didn't study visual art, you know, maybe it's because I always think about that, like, how I kind of approached it and went into it, because it's like, you know, my whole thing is, like, story and, you know, just, I mean, my thing is about, like, transcendence, you know, and it's really about, like, how one experiences the world, like, similar to what we were talking about earlier, you know, like, what is one's perspective in the world? Maybe it's, like, being born in the 60s and going through all that stuff and, you know, everything that somebody experiences as a 60s kid, you know, and all the changes and the drugs, I mean, all that stuff, you know. So, I mean, that's very much where I'm coming from. And so, in a way, I'm not coming from, like, the art school or the just, you know, being, like, sitting in the studio and working. So, when I do work, I was always telling the journalists, please don't call this a spectacle, you know. I mean, I did learn something about, you know, years of being around visual artists and the art world, that you don't want it to become something commercial in a way. You know, there have been people who've wanted to have, like, big sponsors, like Skittles, you know, like, let's do the Global Rainbow for Skittles. And I was like, you know what? I've just been really like, no, all the way. But now
right.
It's like, you know, but I'm not like, you know, so it's actually a good question, and it's an issue that I struggle with a lot, especially with this piece, you know, like, where's that line, you know?
Well, I think there's, you know, that's part of being an artist and pushing those boundaries there. I mean, there's, I think, a number of artists that work on that line. I don't know if you know the work of Irwin Rettel, who does these kind of LED light curtains. He did a curtain in front of the Whitney. He's done them in different places. He's done them in a police training station in New York. And, you know, even though he's an artist that's respected in doing these lights, he's also going back and forth between, you know, his reluctance to do, in a much more extreme way than you, really do commercial installations, working with an architect and doing something purely decorative. But I'm just saying that's kind of a boundary that's interesting for artists to push. And to me, it seems that yours is, I don't know, it works because it reaches a larger audience as opposed to being the design, the notion of is this becoming a commercial element or, you know, pardon the word, a spectacle. It's actually a kind of more populist art. It's reaching more people. I don't know. Is that making sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, no, like, totally. No, I don't know this guy's work, but I, you know, I'll write it down and check him out because it's funny. Like, I live in Germany, and it's interesting, like, what, how, like, there's always, you know, there's, like, artists that are really well-known in Europe and artists that are well-known in New York or in America, and then you kind of, like, discover each other as you go back and forth, and then some just, you know, like, rise to the top and become, like, international sensations, and everybody knows who they are, so, but, yeah, in terms of that, yeah, I mean, you know, I think in the end, it's about, I mean, everything is, like, shifted since the internet, and it's just, like, not the same world. I mean, it's just a really different thing, and I think people are really, you know, looking at, like, the market and what it means to, you know, like, what the gallery system is, like, how, in a way, antiquated it is, and, like, all these notions of, like, purists, like, this is art and this is commercial. Those lines are really gray, you know, now. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's like I own, you know, for me, it's like you have to own your own thing, and I'm cool with it, you know. But I do struggle with it. I for sure do because, you know, it's still something that, yeah, I don't know. I'll figure it out at some point.
So let's move back in your career a little bit. Earlier work, when you just got out of school, what were the next steps? You were in New York, right? You
yeah.
Graduated from Columbia and film and in the late 80s. You began working with different, you know, film projects. Can you just tell me a little about what happened then? How those first years were and what you were thinking? Did you want to be a filmmaker? What was happening?
Absolutely. No, man. I wanted to, you know, I loved the program at Columbia University. It was really amazing and, like, you know, they were just starting Sundance at the time when I was there, and it was just beginning. It was really there were really people from the Columbia University program. I mean, I was like Milos Forman was there, Martin Scorsese. They were like really like David Mamet. You know, you just had Andrew Saris. So I learned so much, and I very much wanted to be a filmmaker. I wanted to be a screenwriter. I would have moved to LA and like done that whole thing. I mean, I was like completely in love with cinema, and I still am, you know, but then cinema kind of changed. I don't know what happened. Like suddenly it became like this special effect, like, you know, that Nouvelle Vague, that like fabulous, like, you know, 70s, you know, all that stuff kind of shifted. And also, I think, you know, like the reality of being a woman and also being a woman of color, you know, kind of making it in the industry, you know, all those like glass ceiling things, I became pretty aware of it early, you know. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's not so easy. And there were a couple of times, I mean, I wrote a lot of scripts, and then at some point, some ideas were really, like, seriously ripped off, and, you know, it was, like, really discouraging. And so, I mean, I worked with...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's all mixed in with, right, I mean, I've heard that before, the cruelty of the film industry stealing like that, but it's also mixed in with, you know, being a woman of color and you trying to make it in this world. Like the politics, social and gender and capitalistic, right? I mean, we're talking about everything.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's still like, I mean, it's, you know, it's still there. You know, you see it in the art, you see it in every, you know, you see it everywhere. You see it in the art world, you see it in film world, you see it in daily life, you know. It's just still kind of not equal. And it's really too bad, you know, but it doesn't mean that, it doesn't stop me from doing it, from, you know, being ambitious.
And what happened next? So you began working on these projects, and then it was around then, I suppose, that you were teaching, and then about 10 years later that the Rainbow Project began, right? But I'm just seeing what happened in between there. So you did the film project, and how did that segue into kind of visual art and the Rainbow?
Well, I worked on a lot of independent film, like with Christine Vachon. I worked on Office Killer with Cindy Sherman. I worked with Al Pacino. Like, I did all this independent cinema stuff, like Vampire's Kiss with Nicolas Cage, and learned a lot of different things, like learned how to be an editor. And then you know, I was always kind of, you know, on the more on the avant-garde, leaning towards the avant-garde. So that, you know, kept me in New York with the independent scene and kind of moved me into like avant-garde theater and this emergence of the moving image in theater. So I got involved with, you know, like ex-members of the Worcester group and started doing experimental theater with video. And that brought me to Europe, which then brought me to visual art, in essence, because I ended up moving to Berlin after doing a tour with this group called the Builders Association. And, you know, it wasn't New York. It wasn't like, you know, these great this great independent cinema that was happening in Berlin. Like, not really. I mean, there's not really an independent cinema movement in Germany, even though you've got this great history, like, of, you know, Wim Wenders and Fassbinder and everything. So I had this kind of illusion, and that's what brought me to visual art, was moving to Europe and moving to Berlin.
Hmm. And then that was around the time when, I mean, what were you making then, and what preceded the rainbow?
So then I, you know, it was like a kind of like a natural transition. So then I started figuring out, okay, like, how do I move the cinema thing into art? And then I kind of started learning about video art. And I became friends with this pretty famous German video artist named Klaus von Bruch, and started, you know, meeting a lot of pretty well-known German art visual artists, and started like educating myself in terms of how do I move the skill that I have and this love of cinema into something else. But, you know, after like 3 years of like, I don't really love, I mean, I can't say that across the board I don't like video art, but it just, I don't know, I just realized like it wasn't happening, and I didn't really, that wasn't where I wanted to go. But then I realized like, well, wait a minute, light, there's something here. And I just kind of grasped, I felt, you know, I realized that maybe light would be the way to go. So, yeah.
So the rainbows began, and the first one was where?
The first one was in New York in 2009, at Ground Zero, for Martin Luther King Day, and kind of celebrating Obama's inauguration.
Yeah, New York was still reeling, and that was the art production fund that produced.
No, this is the one that I did completely on my own. This is the one that I like threw all my money into. I just like did it one.
So tell
night.
Me a little bit about that, because that's pretty intense. So you throw your money into it, and what does that mean? You were your own project manager. You're calling to get permission to mount this, to figure out how to do it. How did that begin? Because that is a pretty like hugely ambitious project to take on by yourself, right?
No, it was, yeah, honestly, like, it was totally crazy. You know, like, that's what I was saying. Like, people were really like, Yvette, like, is everything okay? You know, because I was, like, really obsessed about it. I was like, no, man, like, nobody's ever done it. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it with the lasers. It's going to be amazing, you know. And I had had this residency in Warsaw. I was, like, developing it there. There were people interested, but then, like, you know, like the market fell, there was no money, so I just like took whatever I had and was so enthralled by, you know, and I think the entire world was really, all eyes were on Obama at that point because it was such a historic moment that I was like, okay, well, here's the moment, let's do it for MLK. Like, this is what, you know, in a way, what you're all about. Like, this is how you grew up, this is what your essence is, you know. So, yeah, I just, like, I got the permits. I approached it in a way like a filmmaker, you know. I had a wonderful person who was that was involved in real estate in New York, and she got me permissions to use, I think it was, like, I can't remember the exact address, but it was in Wall Street or on Wall Street. And we had a view right over Ground Zero. And so we projected the rainbow in two different directions. One was over Ground Zero and one was toward the Brooklyn Bridge. But the problem was the lasers were not as powerful as they are now. So the visit, you know, there wasn't like that impact that we have now. But it was like the first sketch, and it was amazing, and it was highly, you know, I have like amazing photographs from it, and it was the beginning. It was the birth of the global rainbow.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, and then after that, it grew. You know, that almost brings us up to the present, but as that grew, you were getting commissions to do this, and just correct me if I'm wrong, and that's what in a sense also changed things financially for you, because the rainbow was beginning to support you as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, totally. You know, I mean, I was like a single mom.
That sounds kind of poetic, right? The rainbow is I'm sorry, go on, but you're supporting. Go on, you're a single mom around then?
I was for like 10 years, you know, and it was really, it was a beautiful project to do while I was raising my son also, because I was able to kind of, you know, give him the time that he needed. And also I was still able to realize like a kind of a wonderful, beautiful vision and have it be successful. So it was a nice combination. And yeah.
How old was he then? That's a wonderful project for your son to see come together.
He was like, God, in 2000, he was born in 2002. So he was like 7, you know, when, it's kind of,
wow, that's so
symbolic.
Cool. I think that's great. Yeah. It's really great. So, I mean, in closing, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the rainbow in terms of kind of, so whether you want to talk about gender politics or race politics, but when I was first like looking at the rainbow series and thinking about this before the interview, I started thinking of other references and, I mean, just things that popped into my head, but things like, what was it, the play for colored girls is considered suicide when the rainbow is enough. Do you know that one or other things?
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely. No, completely.
You know,
go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so I was just wondering about that kind of reference. And also, you know, I mean, it's very interesting because it's also kind of this multicolor thing, right, almost a symbol of diversity, but it's also a symbol of, gay pride is how I read it sometimes, but it's not read that way there. So I'm just thinking about all the references that are in there, as well as it being something that seems to exist on its own, right? Rainbow isn't something, obviously, that's a symbol or a flag of any country. It's this natural phenomena. So, I don't know, all that seems to be kind of tied in there. Is that something you're thinking about as well?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's, you know, when I saw the kind of original, real rainbow that inspired this one, it was right over Walden Pond, you know, so I was really, you know, referencing this, all this stuff with Emerson and transcendence and the transcendentalists. And I think it really, you know, I mean, this piece, and, you know, I've been interviewed for it a million times, and it's like, the piece is for everyone, you know? And I mean, the rainbow means something different for everyone, or it means the same thing for everyone. You know, it's just something that is kind of awe-inspiring. And I've been asked to do it for Gay Pride, and I'm still waiting for like the right, you know, moment to really blast it for that. So for me, it's, you know, whoever, you know, like I would never really turn anyone down who wanted to do it, unless they wanted to do it for something really nasty or evil, but, or, you know, for like pure commercial purposes, we would have to really talk about it. But, you know, it's a piece for everybody.
And I think, I mean, bringing that up, the kind of, you know, racial politics that you're aware of in the whole country and everything else, and partly because of a previous exchange we had over the past interview, what happened with the Pruitt Early installation at as you see it at Castelli in 1995? Because you must have seen that, right? The installation that was considered racist and was recently restaged. Can we talk about that for a second? What do you think?
Oh,
happened?
Yeah. I don't really know, you know, and I did not see it because I wasn't really in the art world. You know, I wasn't really focusing. What year was that in?
I think it was 92, actually.
92, okay. Yeah, no, I was not really in the art world, but I don't, yeah, I have real, honestly, I have real issues with that. And I have real issues, I don't know, I just do. I've read about it, I've thought about it, and, Yeah, I'm not embracing that one. It's a problem for me. It makes me, you know, for me, it's like about like how it makes you feel instinctually, like when you have those, and that's how I kind of like live, you know. And when I read about it, I haven't seen it in person, but what I've read about it and the images that I've seen, it makes my stomach feel uncomfortable. And that's what I trust, and it just doesn't feel right. And that's the only thing I can say about it.
And was it? Do you remember? Was there any conversation about that then? Do you remember people talking about it, or no?
Honestly, no. I don't remember at that time. When did Basquiat die? I think that was like in the late 80s, right? Or
yeah,
yeah. I remember there was more emphasis. I think what I remember about that time was actually a really positive time. I mean, this was like Spike Lee, Basquiat. There was a lot of like positivity around success for artists of color and people of color. And so I don't really remember. I mean, what I'm surprised is that the Tate restaged it. That was something that was like, wow, like, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting.
It's becoming sort of
this revisionist thing. I mean, you know, Jack Early's notion was exactly what you were saying, that, you know, there was all this positivity around being African American and different, and celebrated in a lot of different forms, commercially and artistically, and they were referencing that. He said in the same way that they did a whole show on teenage boys and he said when they did the teenage boy show, you know, which was more like looked like teenage boys' rooms, he said people then said, you know, what do you guys know about teenage boys? You're a gay couple. So, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to defend him at all. I didn't see it either. But he felt like, and maybe you just can't really do that, but he felt like he was kind of displaying what was happening at the moment. I don't know. Does that make any sense, or what do you think?
Well, look, my thing on, you know, like, I dig his, like, these new paintings that Jack did, you know, at Basel. I mean, I didn't see them in person. They're fabulous. I totally get what he's doing. I totally get what they're doing. I think it comes out of, like, an 80s sensibility where, you know, like, in the 80s there was so much emphasis on provocation, on you know, provocative work that would shock. And I mean, I think it still kind of exists, you know, I mean, this kind of sensationalist element that, you know, everybody's supposed to say like, yeah, but, you know, what's wrong with that? We're just, you know, like when Larry Clark did Kids, it's like, well, what's wrong with it? We're just seeing like two 15-year-olds fucking, you know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, it's like a free world. Everybody can do whatever they want. I mean, that's, you know, I'm not like trying to censor anyone, but, you know, my personal opinion, like I did stuff too. Like I did this piece with like an American flag, you know, and like, you know, but, you know, it just gets to a point where you're like, you know, you don't need to, I guess even for myself, it's like this kind of maturity that happens where you realize you don't need to provoke on that level to get a response. And there's a more subtle way of making, or maybe, I don't know, I'm not exactly sure how to express it, but I guess maybe that's why I did, you know, that's why I did the rainbow, because it's not like hitting your head over, it's not like in your face, it's something of beauty, but it resonates on many different levels. And I guess I prefer to see work like that and make work like that. And yeah, and I guess that's my reaction to the Jack Early stuff, is that it's, you know, it's just, it's relying on this provocative reaction, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, what you're saying is clear. So, Yvette, in closing, what is the next project you're doing? Where would you imagine it happening? What is the next possible iteration?
Right. Well, we're working on doing something in Miami, which is very exciting. It could be like one of the longer placements of it. We're talking about maybe opening around the opening of Art Basel, and then running it for a couple of months in Miami and Sao Paulo, Brazil, Qatar, Dallas, Texas, and on and on.
That's exciting. Yvette, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.